sometimes late at night I hear the beat of bumping. I reach for my holster and I wake up all alone. Used to have a wife, she told me I was crazy. Said she couldn't stand the way I fidget all the time. Sometimes late at night I circle around the house. I look through the windows and I dream that she's still mine. I got scars on my back from the way my daddy raised me. I used to have a family until I got divorced. I've gone too far from the things that could save me. I used to be a cop, but they kicked me off the force. I used to be a cop till they kicked me off the force.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots and jackbooted thugs alike. It's the Hour of Power again. It is the TNT radio show, Thursday Night Truth, on the My View Matters radio network. today's date is Thursday, March the 7th already? No, it's March the 6th. Almost got the wrong date there, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, you are listening to TNT Radio. This is your host, Dale the Truth. As always, we'll start out the show with This Week in History. We hope you involved yourself in listening to the archives, if not the live episodes, of last month's shows, because last month we had the month of interviews, and we don't have a lot of guests on the show, but we did last month, and we brought on several guests, in fact. We started out the month with a show where we had our good friend Frank Harris on talking about the Libertarian Party, and then we had our good friend Matt Singleton on talking about the occult. And then the following week, we had our friend Michael Lewis talking about independent Kentucky. And then the following week, we had our good friend Chris Diamond on with us talking about the police state. So here we are again, ladies and gentlemen. We're back here on the airwaves with you tonight. And as always, if you want to call in, the number 858-683-1326. We will go straight to This Week in History. A lot of stuff this week, since this is Thursday, March the 6th. Get it right this time. This Week in History, 1991, the LAPD put their beat down on Rodney King. Who knew that 20-some years ago it would also be for white people, too? Who knew, right? Oppose the police state and you get beat down, just like our opening song there, used to be a cop by the drive-by truckers where they got kicked off the force. So that's something we like to see more of, them getting kicked off the force instead of getting a two-week paid vacation. But moving right along, this week in 1770, the Boston Massacre. This week in 1933, the high and mighty wannabe king, the traitor terrorist ruling class master, FDR, confiscated all the gold in the United States, forcing foreclosure on the United States in this state in 1933. And in 1983, this week, we had the case of Briscoe versus LaHue, where they said the police cannot be punished for lying. So I just thought that was interesting. Keeping that going with our history of the police state. And again, we want to go into some stuff this week that we know you guys are thinking about. We're very opinionated here, and hopefully the anonymous random private phone calls that like to harass my phone during the show will relinquish tonight. We get a lot of these calls, and we know we're saying stuff on the airwaves that they don't want us to talk about. And we're getting enough listeners. I know we have hundreds of listeners, so hopefully we have enough listeners that if they ever disappear us, folks, you'll know it was them. Because I've said before, and I'll say again, I'm not going to run away from home, and I'm not going to commit suicide. So if all of a sudden you see that Dale the Truth has disappeared, you'll know it's because they have disappeared me. So just wanted to get that out there. Big issues that we want to talk about tonight, we didn't get to talk about on the Ed Springsteen show last night, are Russia. Now, a lot of people are asking me about this situation in Russia and my feelings about it, and I was telling people years ago that they would try to bring the Soviet Union back together. Of course, we were called conspiracy nuts and paranoid and extreme when we said that they would try to get the Soviet Union back together. We were saying that several years ago. But again, moving forward, we also have been talking for weeks, if not months, about this facade that you are supposed to believe is supposed to be Russia attacking Ukraine. It's not the Ukraine, it's Ukraine. And they don't want to tell you the whole story about what goes on in Ukraine. So we figured it might be a good time to talk about it tonight. They don't want to talk about the George Soros involvement in trying to prop up Ukraine. They don't want to talk about the fact that it was Obama's minions and George Soros' minions who tried to create this false sense of freedom coming to Ukraine. They don't want to talk about that, of course. And lo and behold, most people fell for it. Most people fell for the belief that Russia was going to take on poor little Ukraine. Forget about what happened back with Georgia, back when the country of Georgia, no, not Atlanta, not Macon, but the country of Georgia, back when they provoked Russia, when they poked the bear, literally and figuratively. They don't want you to think that any small country might be picking a battle with somebody bigger than them. It's always got to be the big guy. And then why not? We're used to police state countries trying to spread empire around the world, right? And sure enough, coming from The Guardian this week, today, as a matter of fact, Barack Hussein Obama ramping up pressure on Russian President Vladimir Putin. Today, he said he was imposing visa restrictions on officials for, quote, threatening the sovereignty of Ukraine and signing an order, an executive order, and another illegal, unconstitutional executive order that will enable further sanctions against Moscow. Now, friends, when have you ever heard Barack Obama concerned about anybody getting sovereignty? It's the last thing that Barack Obama has ever been concerned with, sovereignty. Give me a break. And the White House said that the measures were a response to Russia's, quote, ongoing violation of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Are you believing this, folks? No, I'm not either. I didn't think you would. You're smarter than that. The White House said the measures were a response to the ongoing violation of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. And then in Brussels, you have European leaders holding an emergency meeting to decide whether to impose their own sanctions on Russia. And before the summit, the European Union, the worthless EU, they froze the assets of the Ukrainian leader, now ousted leader, backed by Russia, Viktor Yanukovych. They froze the assets of Yanukovych and 17 other officials suspected of violating human rights and misuse of state funds. Folks, this will be laughable. This will be like something out of a Monty Python skit if it wasn't so sad. So we have President Barack Hussein Obama telling you that he wants to stand up for the sovereignty of a country. And you have the White House, which is basically the president. It's the same thing. And you have Brussels, where the European Union saying that Russia violated human rights. And these ousted leaders like Yanukovych misused state funds. How many state funds are misused in our country every day, every hour, every minute, every second? Now, thankfully, Germany, ironic, isn't it, was a little bit more of a reasonable voice. Germany made it clear that it wanted to give a political process a chance before introducing sanctions. It actually wanted to think logically, if you can imagine that. Germany's saying that the summit was likely to reserve the option of imposing limited measures against Moscow in the event of no diplomatic breakthrough. And of course, back in Washington, the Obama administration did not say how many people were going to be subject to these visa bans or reference their nationality. However, the targets described as, quote, officials and individuals believed to be Russians held responsible for the week-old occupation of Crimea. Remember Crimea? No, you don't remember Crimea because you never heard about Crimea. It's one of those new hot terms right there along with polar vortex that we never heard of before. No one knew where Crimea was. Hell, most of our kids today in the public school indoctrination camps can't point out Russia on a map, much less Ukraine or Crimea. But the White House said the visa restrictions reflected policy decision to deny visas to those responsible for or complicit in threatening the sovereignty, here we go again, and the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Now here came the munchkin Jay Carney out, the president's secretary, press secretary, saying that the additional executive order will authorize sanctions on individuals and entities responsible for activities undermining the democratic process in Ukraine. He said those included threatening the peace, security, stability, sovereignty, or once again, there's the word, territorial integrity of Ukraine, contributing to misappropriation of state assets of Ukraine, or purporting to assert governmental authority over any part of Ukraine without authorization from the Ukrainian people. What about all the things that they do to misappropriate our state assets, my friends? What about the asserting government authority over our people? That doesn't matter, of course. All this from a president, remember, who has killed more children than every other Nobel Peace Prize winner combined. I can't really read much more with this crap that we hear about these sanctions. These sanctions will be more symbolic than pragmatic and effective. Many people saying Putin has already accomplished what he wanted, which was control of the Crimean Black Seaports. And then when it comes time for negotiations, that Putin will be able to bargain for the use of that port, which is a vital piece of the Russian Black Sea Fleet. What leadership that Barack Obama is sending over to Ukraine? What leadership, right? We have visa restrictions on Russian officials and sanctions via an unconstitutional executive order. Now, I want us to look at Russia tonight. I teased last night on the show with Ed Springsteen here, folks, on the My View Matter Network. I teased the fact that we're going to talk about a leader who wants to crush countries, who wants to dictate the countries, who wants to kill people in countries and wants to take over. And I said, oh, no, we're not going to talk about Vladimir Putin, but we're going to talk about Barack Obama. And you got U.S. officials, and of course the mainstream press, all got their panties afire, all got their uproar, their indignation over Russia's invasion of Crimea. Now, if only they would feel the same degree of outrage and indignation over what the U.S. national security state, which was once grafted onto our governmental system without even the semblance of a constitutional amendment, if only they would feel the same degree of outrage over what that security state has done to our republic. Folks, don't you think it's a little bit ironic, it's fascinating that U.S. officials and the mainstream press are able to quickly arrive at the moral high ground and they're condemning foreign intervention on the part of Russia, while at the same time blocking out of their minds all the foreign interventionism on the part of the U.S. government for many, many decades. Have they forgot about Honduras, Grenada, Panama, Nicaragua, Cuba, Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam? Do they simply consider these actions to be good and honorable because they were done in the name of America? It's rather amusing, isn't it, to see the U.S. war hawks mock Russia's claim that it's protecting Russian citizens. When the U.S. invaded Panama, did not U.S. national security state officials justify that invasion? You had all these people killed, I would argue many of them innocent, mind you. Didn't the U.S. national security state justify the invasion of Panama with their much vaunted war on drugs? How about this, folks? How about the invasion and war of aggression in Iraq? Remember how that story went down? Remember that wonderful TV miniseries where we had a bunch of hijackers, allegedly, take planes and run them into buildings? And these hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, so naturally we need to attack Iraq. Huh? What? By the way, where are those infamous weapons of mass destruction? Where are those WMTs? Where is that yellow cake uranium that we keep looking for? Was it out of concern for democracy and the well-being of the Iraqi people that the U.S. government would kill, maim, incarcerate, torture, and exile millions of Iraqis? Not one single one of them who had a damn thing to do with September 11th? Let's just stick to the official story for a minute. You want to talk about a conspiracy theory? Let's believe the conspiracy theory that in our country, which we're so protected and we can fight every enemy off and nobody would ever attack us, let's just believe the state conspiracy theory for a moment. Not the 9/11 report, the stuff they didn't want you to read, not that. Let's just go with the state conspiracy theory report and assume that all of these Saudi Arabians did indeed attack the World Trade Centers. And if they did, these Saudi Arabians, these Saudi nationals, then why did we turn around and attack Iraq? And I say we, meaning the U.S. government. See, there is a longstanding principle in the law called standing. The principle precludes a party from making certain legal claims. For example, if a party comes to you in court with what the law calls, quote, unclean hands, unquote, it's held to lack standing to seek relief. The principle of standing should apply to international affairs. If anybody lacks standing to complain of Russian interventionism, it's the U.S. government. Consider the U.S. government's long-standing policy of foreign interventionism, including invasions, occupations, assassinations, foreign aid to dictatorships, and regime changes. It clearly comes into the international arena with unclean hands. Now compare Switzerland. Switzerland has a standing to complain about the Russian aggression because the Swiss government, unlike the U.S. government, the Russian government, the Swiss government does not engage in foreign interventionism and foreign aggression. The Swiss government limits itself to the defense of Switzerland. It butts out of the affairs of other nations. It minds its own damn business. Wouldn't it be nice to be like Switzerland? Wouldn't it be wonderful to be like Switzerland? But because it minds its own business, it's unlikely that the Swiss government will go into crisis mode and talk about how it wants to punish Russia. It's not likely to happen. You see, the Swiss government's policy of non-interventionism exemplifies what our founding fathers had to say. Turning around here, folks, and looking at my bookshelf, hopefully I don't lose sound here, but there's a great book that Dr. Ron Paul wrote many, many years ago called A Foreign Policy of Freedom. And it was a collection of his writings about how we should promote freedom in foreign policy and not interventionism. We should promote liberty and not empire. You see, the Swiss government's policy of non-interventionism is what John Quincy Adams was about. John Quincy Adams intimated in his 4th of July address in 1821 that lots of bad things happen around the world. Lots of bad things happen around the world. There is aggression. There are famines. There are wars. There are tyrants. There are revolutions. And there is suffering. And as John Quincy Adams pointed out, however, the foreign policy of the United States would be to stay out of foreign messes. Instead, the American people would devote their efforts. The American people would devote their efforts to building a free and prosperous society here at home to serve both as a model and a sanctuary for the people of the world. Now, our good friend Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes has pointed out in the chat room that the Swiss conspired with the Nazis during World War II, and that there was no real Swiss neutrality during World War II. Well, we're talking about today, Paul. We're not talking about World War II. We also could talk about how the Catholic Church was conspiring with the Nazis in World War II. We could also talk about how we were on the side of the Soviet Union and communism in World War II. So a lot of things have changed since World War II. Unfortunately, back 100 years ago, those with a mindset of statism, even before World War II, and a mindset of interventionism, took America in this direction. Then with the adoption of the national security state after World War II, Americans were induced in the name of opposing communism. Americans were induced to embrace Soviet-like policies and programs, including such un-American things as invasions, occupations, torture, drug experimentations, hiring of Nazi officials, since we're talking about the Nazis. The U.S. national security state is all about the hiring of Nazi officials, partnerships with brutal foreign dictatorships, regime change operations, and the ouster of democratically elected regimes, replacing them with brutal dictatorships. Maybe now, in the year 2014, the Americans could engage in serious self-examination. Now would be a good time to dismantle the empire and work on what Dr. Ron Paul said in his book over here on my shelf, A Foreign Policy of Freedom. Maybe it would be a good time to stop the types of things that are inherent to autocratic and totalitarian regimes. Maybe it would be a good time to stop searching for crises that serve as an excuse to expand the empire, the CIA, and the NSA. Maybe we should return to our nation's founding principles. You are listening to the TNT Radio Show, and we will return after our bottom of the hour break.
There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say, hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice, there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ. There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say, hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice, and there goes the last human voice. And there goes the last DJ.
and sometimes you kind of come in, and I'll bust a move and remember how it was back then. And there goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. Hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for holding on there, and we are back on the TNT radio show on Thursday Night Truth. And we had some other Bitcoin news we were going to cover tonight, but we have kind of breaking Bitcoin news tonight because a story that just came out today, believe it or not, Newsweek is trying to break news stories. The story just came out today is that Bitcoin founder Satoshi Nakamoto might have been discovered despite his best efforts to maintain anonymity over the last several years. Newsweek magazine is reporting today that it spent considerable time tracking down the father of Bitcoin only to discover that he might be living in Temple City, California. It took a winding road to reach 64-year-old man named Satoshi Nakamoto, who not only had no desire to speak with Newsweek, but he called the police on their reporter. When the police arrived, Nakamoto, who Newsweek had been contacting and trying to track down for weeks, finally had something to say. He said, "I am no longer involved in Bitcoin, and I cannot discuss it," he reportedly told Newsweek. "It's been turned over to other people. They are in charge of it. I am no longer having any connection." Now, according to Newsweek, the man who spoke in front of police that day lives in a modest home in California, despite holding $400 million worth. Newsweek described the man wearing a rumpled T-shirt, old blue jeans, and white gym socks without shoes, like he had left his house in a hurry. Nakamoto has become a household name in technology circles due to the increasingly popularity of Bitcoin. And we were telling you about Bitcoin on the airwaves here many months ago. And although he's generally believed to be the father of the cryptocurrency, Nakamoto has never actually revealed himself. What's worse, Nakamoto is a common name, according to Newsweek, I guess from his origin, further complicating matters of identification. Even so, as Newsweek continued to investigate this man in California, the more the puzzle pieces seem to fall into place. Nakamoto is known as a genius among family members, all of whom had no idea he might be involved in the creation of Bitcoin, and seems to have the requisite skills to develop the cryptocurrency, graduating from California State Polytechnic University with a degree in physics. He also worked in security and communications for, you guessed it, the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. Still, the Newsweek piece makes it clear that the man that they identified in California may not in fact be the person behind Bitcoin. But wait a minute, that's their headline. That's their story. That's their cover. If you see this cover of Newsweek they're getting ready to come out with, it says the man behind Bitcoin. But it appears possible, at least now possible, that the Satoshi Nakamoto, who lives in Temple City, California, may also be the Nakamoto who started Bitcoin. So I guess we are going to start saying, well, the real Satoshi Nakamoto will just stand up. It's like, trust me, I'm Spartacus, right? I mean, a lot of people call it a Ponzi scheme. I've explained to you what a Ponzi scheme is. A Ponzi scheme is our Social Security system in the United States. That's a Ponzi scheme. Our Ponzi scheme is the income tax system. That's a Ponzi scheme. So who knows if this guy is really the founder of Bitcoin or not. But sticking with Bitcoin news, it also appears today that the Bitcoin firm First Meta had their CEO found dead in a suspected suicide. Now, Fox News thinks it's cute. Fox News thinks it's cute to make fun of suicide and saying Bitcoin has claimed its first life. That's about as irresponsible journalism as it comes, but it is Fox News. What do you expect? Local media are calling it a suicide. 28-year-old American CEO Autumn Ratke was found dead in her Singapore apartment last week. She's an American. She's 28 years old, and she was the CEO, the American CEO of Bitcoin Exchange First Meta. Now, local media are calling it a suicide, but Singapore officials are waiting for a toxicology test. Ratke formerly worked with Apple and other Silicon Valley tech firms on developing digital payment systems. Now, if you count, this is the financial sector. This is tying Bitcoin, I guess, in to the globalist, if you will. If you count the financial sector, this would bring the total of questionable financial sector deaths this year to 8. You haven't heard about that in the mainstream press recently, right? On February 18, a 33-year-old J.P. Morgan finance pro leaped to his death from the roof of the 30-story Hong Kong office tower of J.P. Morgan. Li Junji's suicide was the third mysterious death of a J.P. Morgan banker. So far, no known link between any of the deaths. Gabriel McGee, 39, was a vice president with J.P. Morgan's corporate investment bank technology arm, and Gabriel also jumped to his death from the roof of a 33-story Canary Wharf tower in London last month. On February 3rd, Ryan Henry Crane, 37, a J.P. Morgan executive director who worked in New York, was found dead in his home in Stamford, Connecticut. Nothing to see here, right? No big deal that all these financial people are found dead. Now, the question about Autumn Racky, the 28-year-old American CEO of Bitcoin exchange First Meta, was she used and discarded? Was it a cartel death? Was it a drug death, unable to prove that there was ever a perpetrator? I really do wish I had bought Bitcoin a couple years ago. Hell, if I'd bought Bitcoin 1 year ago, it would be beautiful. But I think right now it's too risky of a buy. We waited too long to get in. So was this maybe assisted suicide? Did she piss off too many extremely wealthy people? I still get worried about Bitcoin being systematically targeted for forcible dismantling. Now, this afternoon, Bitcoin was at about $650. $650. It was about $30 or $40 a year ago. Why is Bernie Madoff still alive? Anybody ever wonder about that? Look at all the people he ripped off. Why did you never find out that he slipped and fell in the shower or beat within an inch of a life for what he did? Why is Bernie Madoff still living large in the country club prison? Getting a little worried about what's going on here. I'm all for Bitcoin because it gets us away from the phony dollar, which is not a dollar. It's simply a Federal Reserve note put out by a Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor a reserve. So we're waiting on toxicology test results to find the death results and reasons of one Autumn Racky, 28 years old. Now remember, just last week, the Japanese-based Mt. Gox exchange went bankrupt. And we found out that computer hackers the day before had robbed it of $600,000. So it sounds like it's like the new Wild West. I don't think that Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme. I really don't. But I do think that they're trying to target it. I do think the government has its paws over a lot of this stuff. So was Autumn Racky Vince fostered? Is that what happened? Was she killed by very wealthy people who were pissed off? I don't know. Is suicide contagious among the banksters? I don't know. Maybe was she murdered because she was about to stop the high volume stealing and lying that was going on? I don't know. Fiat currencies, folks, are how governments control people. When you get into Bitcoin, when you get into these alternative currencies, they're giving people a way to get around the phony Federal Reserve notes. I know a lot of people are cynical because the CEO of the currency exchange is 28 years old. That pisses off a lot of old banksters. Just want to let you know, folks, Bitcoins are not like Enron energy credits. I don't want you to think that. But yes, I had people tell me a few months ago that they thought that Bitcoin was not going to end well. I have people telling me they would not be surprised that organized crime was behind it somewhere. And then they can point to Hezbollah or the Russian mafia or the phony Taliban or the Iranian secret police or the North Koreans. But you think the North Koreans would be a little too stupid to have gotten this far. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but we do keep you up to date on Bitcoin here. Now, the other story that I wanted to bring up tonight, I didn't know if I'd have time, so I'm moving along here at cutthroat pace to bring up, was the story about the Texas primary elections. Yep, two nights ago we had the Texas primary elections, and we all knew that John Cornyn was going to win. He had no significant opposition. His opponents never got Tea Party or conservative support. But Ted Cruz, although not on the ballot, won big in Texas Tuesday night. You see, one way we knew that Ted Cruz had won big were the people who were attacking him afterwards. Brian Walsh, the paid advisor hack to the NRSC, took to Twitter and obtusely attacked Cruz. Cruz did not endorse Cornyn, who himself did not endorse Cruz in 2012. See, this wasn't like Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell's cozy relationship. They did not endorse each other. But this is all a distraction. Ted Cruz showed just how powerful he is in Texas Tuesday night. Ted Cruz endorsed five candidates. Four of the five candidates that Ted Cruz endorsed in Texas won outright. And the fifth one is still involved in a runoff. So right now, I guess if it was a hockey team, you could say Ted Cruz's endorsements are 4-0-1 because he's 4-0 and he may end up 5-0. That one may move into the winning category, the winning column. Connie Burton is leading into a runoff in Wendy Davis' state senate district. Connie was behind, but after Cruz's support, found herself in first place. Donna Campbell was running against well-funded establishment pick for the state senate. Almost had a Freudian there and said well-funded establishment prick, but what's the difference, right? Donna Campbell was running against this well-funded establishment prick and won without a runoff after getting a positive reference from Ted Cruz. Wayne Christian was an early supporter of Ted Cruz in 2012. He is now leading the race for Texas Railroad Commissioner. He is also the former head of the Texas Conservative Coalition. And then there was David Dewhurst. He ran against Ted Cruz in 2012. Yes, he's the Texas Lieutenant Governor, another establishment pick. And front runner against Ted Cruz until finally Cruz beat him. Dewhurst had high statewide name ID. I guess he would be the equivalent, hell, he's lieutenant governor. I mean, as a Republican Texas goes, that's bigger than David Williams was in Kentucky when old Black Jack Williams was roaming the halls of the state senate. But now David Dewhurst, the Texas lieutenant governor, establishment prick, finds himself in a runoff with Dan Patrick. Not Dan Patrick of sports, but Dan Patrick to keep his job. And Dan Patrick was endorsed by, you guessed it, Ted Cruz. So Cruz is showing his ability to not just get himself across the finish line, but get other Republicans through their own primaries. Perhaps if Walsh and Senate GOP hack staffers keep attacking Cruz, it'll finally dawn that Cruz needs to collect some scalps on his own side in his own chamber to change things. Maybe Ted Cruz is going to stretch his legs in Republican primaries outside of Texas. We can only hope so because we've got a little Republican primary for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. We got some other Republican primaries in Kentucky for state races where it's the Republican establishment pricks against the Tea Party. Generally, we had very good news from the Texas Republican primaries. If you can go down deep in the heart of Texas and have very good news from the Republican primaries, I think it's a very auspicious start for the 2014 election year, folks. Maybe if Cruz had spoken up against the corny man, John Cornyne, maybe he would have been toast. But see, what Cruz did was he kept quiet. He did not endorse an establishment U.S. Senator prick. Now, we got an establishment U.S. Senator prick in Kentucky, and that is good old Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr. But see, Ted Cruz appears smart enough to endorse those who are solid candidates and already have at least a reasonable, if not good, chance at winning. A lot of people don't think that Matt Bevin has a good chance at winning in Kentucky. That's the crap they keep throwing at us. Mind you, they never tell us anything good that McConnell's doing. All we hear is, well, McConnell could be majority leader and Matt Bevin can't win. It's the same old BS that they've told us for a long, long time. They told us in 2010 that Rand Paul, Dr. Rand Paul, eye doctor from Bowling Green, couldn't beat Charles Merwin Grayson the fourth, fifth, whatever the hell he was, before he ran his ass out of his state secretary of state office and went up to Massachusetts to raise money for Democrats and take a cushy job at Harvard. How about that one? Trey Grayson, if he hadn't ran off after getting his ass kicked by Rand Paul, maybe if he would have stayed in his job and not been a quitter like Sarah Palin, maybe if he had stayed Secretary of State, it wouldn't have allowed Alison Lindgren Grimes to gain more notoriety. See, maybe, who knew, maybe if Charles Merwin Grayson, the third, fourth, and fifth, had stayed in the Secretary of State's office instead of pouting and running off to Massachusetts, maybe he could have helped his buddy, Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr. Who knows? Who knows? But the Tea Party is very influential. I've heard so long from so many people about how the Tea Party was dying. The Tea Party was dying. I heard that from conservative circles. I heard that from liberal circles. I heard that from neocon circles. And the Tea Party ain't dying, folks. Again, they said that Rand Paul couldn't beat Charles Merwin Grayson. 2010. 2011, they did not give our good friend Jamie Comer much chance to become the agriculture secretary, much less fumigate the damn place and clean up little Richie Farmer's mess. In 2012, they sure didn't know that a sitting U.S. congressman from Northern Kentucky was going to resign and then go into lobbyist work. And they did not know that an engineer, a freaking genius by the name of Tom Massey, was going to run. And they said he couldn't win either. And they tried to put 7, 8, 9 establishment candidates up against him. And he got more votes than every other neocon candidate combined. So 2014 is here, folks. We got some races that you all might think that can't be winnable. People think, oh, Matt Bevin can't beat Addison Mitchell Jerome McConnell Jr. We got some races that are very winnable. We got races like our good friend Phil Moffitt running against the former Jefferson County Republican Party chairman, woman, person, who said they did not want us Liberty folks in their party, but they sure want the vote now. They sure won our vote. Do the research, folks, and you're going to find out the Tea Party ain't dead. Rumors of our death are just that. The Tea Party is alive and well, and the Constitution is trying to hold on. The Constitution is trying to hold on and be alive and well. That's what you need to remember. So we started out talking about Russia, and yeah, we talked a little bit about Bitcoin. We got back to Texas and the 2014 elections. Do any neocons have any values out there? Look at all the examples that show how messed up, seriously, this country is. People want to give you a distraction issue, a false flag, if you will, pun intended, about the American flag is being banned in schools. They want to use that as a distraction. It's not a big issue. Nobody likes it or doesn't know about it when I try to bring up the fact that the Pledge of Allegiance was started by a socialist who also ran a flag company. No, you need to be focusing more about how our freaking court system has gone insane. You need to be focusing on a court system with the men and women in the black muumuus, like in Massachusetts, where the high court has ruled that a man can secretly take photos of a woman's skirt and it doesn't break the law. You need to be worried about a state supreme judicial court who reported that a man took these cell phone photos of female writers' skirts and he didn't break the law. You need to be concerned about how little humanity there is left. Our good friend Paul from Stop Invisible Taxes said the human values of 2014 are not much different than those of the empire-building days of Julius Caesar. And I agree. Look how cruel that children are coming and how stupid children are becoming. They're freaking nothing but mind-numb robots walking around on their damn smartphones with their pants down below their ass. They can't speak English. And these are the American ones. I'm talking about the white kids who can't speak English. And I'm sorry, but I'm not 80 years old. I'm not 70 years old. I'm not 60. I'm not even 50 or 45 years old. But when you look at these people in the workplace, and they all got tattoos that go from their forehead to their chin to their cheeks to their neck to their shoulders to their back to their lower back, and they have piercings that go from their eye to their nose to their cheek to their lips to their nipples. This is not healthy. Sorry. Not saying I want to ban it, because I think people should be allowed to look like dumbasses if they want to look like dumbasses. If you want to have tattoos all over your body, and corporations are stupid enough to hire you when you have piercings going from the top of your body as well, and your pants are down around your knees, and you got to hold them up as you walk down the hallway, then go for it. But the Persians and the manipulations and the child sex trade and the constant police state and the police brutality and the mega banksters that are spying on you and the Obama administration and the food industry under siege. It's time to get right on some of these things, folks. Time for you to decide, are you going to be their little sheep? Are you going to keep going along with their experimentations? Are you going to keep going along with what they tell you to do? Are you going to play on their little smartphones so they can track you everywhere, send you little text messages, let your damn English language fall to crap, not know a damn thing about what's going on around you? Are you going to stand up, man up, grow some balls, and say death to the New World Order? Choice is yours, my friend. What's it going to be?
Seen a one-trick pony and feel so happy and free. If you've ever seen a one-trick pony, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-legged dog making his way down the street? If you've ever seen a one-legged dog, then you've seen me. Then you've seen me. Come and stand at every door. You've seen me. I always leave with less than I had before. You've seen me. But I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more?
of dust and weeds. If you ever seen that scarecrow, then you've seen me. Have you ever seen a one-eyed man punching at nothing but the breeze? If you ever seen a one-eyed man, then you seen me. Then you seen me. I come and stand at every door. Then you seen me. I always leave with less than I had before. Then you seen me. But I can make you smile when the blood it hits the floor. Tell me, friend, can you ask for anything more? Tell me, can you ask for anything more? These things that have comforted me, I drive away. This place that is my home, I cannot stay. My only faith's in the broken bones and bruises I display. Have you ever seen a one-legged man trying to dance his way free? If you ever seen a one-legged man, then you seen me.